Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome to Chai Chat and welcome to Love Month. This is our February 1st show, and we'll have a second one coming up for you in a couple of weeks. And what is the color of February? It's red. What is the shape of February? It's a heart, right? So we're not going to get too schmaltzy, right, Mary? But we are going to focus on some real important concepts, I think, that are really highlighted in the month of February. Mary Rockenstein is my co-host. We're here to present a show that will help, hopefully help you transform your world of work and be the change that your work world can actually exhibit. And Mary Rockenstein is my very cool co-host. Mary, how you doing out there this love month?
Hey, I'm doing great. In fact, speaking of love, I love the scenery outside today. It looks like the Chronicles of Narnia, doesn't it? At least from where we sit. Sort of. If you're listening down south, I'm sure you cannot relate to that comment, but it looks really beautiful out.
Yes, we've got this beautiful little snow-tipped etching going on out there. Yes, indeed, it's beautiful. And it's a beautiful way to bring in February. It's nice and picturesque. And we're going to switch gears this month a little bit. We're going to talk about a big picture choice, actually. And the big picture choice is indicated in our title for the show, Love at Work. Is it an oxymoron or is it a sign of evolution? And we are not talking about, you know, water cooler romance or any of that kind of, you know, stuff, right, Mary? We're really talking about some big picture here in terms of the choice to embrace a competitive environment and a competitive fabric to the work world, or to really lean towards something that looks more like collaboration and cooperation. And, you know, I honestly believe that we're seeing the peak of a real ideological contrast point here: competition or cooperation. It's been war in the world of business as usual for a long, long time. Competition has ruled the scene. There's been a lack of consciousness. There's been a real issue of get there first and look over your shoulder. And this is embedded in mass consciousness, and it's embedded in your consciousness right now, because it's pretty much what we see and hear and feel everywhere as a backdrop to our culture. You know, I want everybody to sort of get a feel for what that really feels like, you know, inside of you. What does it feel like to be looking in the rearview mirror, to be, you know, trying to get ahead every moment, to worry about the pressure of who's going to get there first, or what's your price point going to be, and is going to be lower than the guy across the street, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And chasing numbers and all of this business as usual kind of stuff. I'd like you to really, you know, sort of for a moment, just feel into what that all feels like. Even talking about it feels stressful to me. And then there's this other side of the coin, and the other side is about what would the world look like if it had more collaboration and cooperation, and what if there was an interdependence to this and there was some way to actually have win-win happen, to have everyone really be leaning in a direction of expansion, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later in the show. But it's a very different feeling, and I feel different even talking about these two concepts. Mary, how does it feel to you?
Yeah, it's, you know, you said it was a choice, and it is a choice. I think in so many instances, especially as it pertains to work, we believe that, you know, it's competition because, you know, if you don't knock your competition off and squish them like a bug, you know, you won't be in business tomorrow. And, you know, it really is a conscious choice. And there are companies that are really focusing more on cooperation than competition.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about how does this relate to what we've been talking about in our past few shows, which is, you know, some real negative, you know, numbers in terms of high numbers of disengagement, high numbers of dissatisfaction with work and job. And, you know, these things connect. I really believe that it's this fear-based mentality that has people feeling disengaged and has people, you know, because ultimately we're, you know, we've talked about this, Mary and I, in preparing for the show, and, you know, there is a part of our brain that is wired for survival. That is a reptilian part of our brain. It's called the amygdala, for all of you science buffs out there. And it is wired to help us survive, you know. A dinosaur will eat you. You must grab your club and start swinging. But this isn't that kind of world, in a sense, at this moment, exactly. Typically, our hair is not on fire, and we don't really need to grab a club and start swinging it, but the amygdala is still there, being fired all the time and being stimulated by a mindset and an ideology that keeps that in place. And I'm here to say that I really think we need to evolve past that in a hurry in order for us to literally survive. It's almost as though it used to be who swings the biggest club will survive, and now it really isn't. It's kind of who connects and is able to move forward in an interdependent expansion-based kind of way that's going to really, you know, thrive, not just survive. Mary, what are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think we rely on that reptilian brain metaphor way too much. And, you know, there's a body of psychology, and you know this better than I do. You know, Victoria, you're a PhD psychologist, but for the past 200 years, psychologists have been telling us that, you know, the spirit of cooperation is much more powerful than focusing on competition. And I was looking at a white paper earlier this week by a guy by the name of Perry Buffington. He's also a PhD psychologist, and I love what he said. He said, competition brings out the beast in us, and cooperation brings out the best in us. What do you think about that?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a nice play on words, but it's also true. And the fact is, how do you really feel being a beast, and how do you really feel being your best? I mean, if you really feel into these things, your human fabric will tell you which one fits and which one doesn't. You know, it's kind of interesting because, just a reflection, was watching the Super Bowl the other day, and there were a couple of beastly things that happened on the field. And, you know, I was appalled, and I think, you know, gee, these kind of behaviors should pull a player out of the game. So, I mean, there's a way to play the game that is fair. That's what rules are for. And is actually shows who's the better team, and then there are ways to play the game that are beastly. And I really don't think shows a whole lot about competence. It's really not very human and not very humane to behave in these ways, whether we're talking about the business world or whether we're talking about the Super Bowl and a football game. Right, Mary? I mean,
yeah.
It's really...
You know, I have a couple of examples that I'll share with you really quick. You know, when we think about, there still are businesses, and this is how I couch it, they're still flying feverently that competitive flag. How's that for an alliteration? Flag flying feverently. Mm-hmm. You know, but they really are. And when I hear that, and I have some of that within my client base, and when I hear that, I try to respectfully pull the leadership aside and say, you know, if you spent more time and energy right now focusing on how to create an overall better experience for your client, your customer, your end user, you know, instead of trying to beat up the competition or looking over your shoulder and wondering what they're doing today, I bet you would have the lion's share of whatever your business is. And I also believe that you would create a better work environment for your associates, and they'd have greater levels of satisfaction. I have seen that time and time again. In fact, I have a client that I've had a relationship with, Victoria, for 15 years. And these folks play in a very big niche. They have very big players that are their competition within, you know, their brand. And yet I've never known them to stress over it. They don't talk about the competition. They have a very loyal following, and they just go about doing the best job they can do to serve their customers every day and give them what they want and what they need and what they desire. And, you know, some people listening might say, well, yeah, but how's that working for them? Well, they've been in business for 95 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's working pretty good. Yeah.
I think it's working. I really do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you can speak to this. I would say look at us. You know, for those people that are not really too familiar with who we are, Victoria and I, yeah, we joke about we're both from Pittsburgh, but we didn't know each other then. We met, you know, in the metropolitan area in which we're currently living. And when we met, we both had existing coaching practices. That's something that we share in common. Our business models are different, but one of the things that we both do, we coach clients. Now, we could have looked at each other, right, Victoria, and said, well, I'm not going to have any further conversation with you because you're playing in my sandbox, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, absolutely, and we've had colleagues that do look at us that way.
We do, but we from, I think, the get-go quickly figured out your background is very different from my background. So the people that would naturally gravitate to you as a coach are not going to be the people that I would better serve because our backgrounds are different. And the coaching population is huge, isn't it, in terms of the body of folks that, you know, desire coaching. So we never really looked at ourselves as competitors. And from the get-go, it was pretty cool in terms of, hey, how can we collaborate? That led to relaunching Chai Chat, and now we're talking about doing some even more interesting things later on in the year. But yet, yeah. Don't we both know people that, as coaches, would walk up, stand right beside us, hand somebody their business card, and say, hey, I'm a coach, you should call me sometime. The competition is out there. It really is.
Well, and it's about mindset. And that's one of the things, you know, people out there, you know, as Mary and I, we're a really good example of, you know, two people who met who are in sort of the same business. But, you know, what we saw was so much excitement about the things that we could share about what we knew and what we could do good with what we knew and how we could package this or make it in an interdependent way so that we could have some fun with it. You know, if nobody's in your sandbox, you also have no one to play with.
I'm an only child,
and I can tell you that it's real important to have friends because I didn't have any siblings. Friends are sacred, and it's very, very important. And, you know, I use another metaphor. I taught tennis for a long, long time, and, you know, Mary talks about the company that's been around 95 years must be doing something right, and focus is really on the people that they are serving and not really, you know, on their competition. And it's just like teaching someone to play tennis. If you're looking at your opponent, you're going to miss the ball. It's very important that you focus on the ball. You'll see your opponent moving peripherally, but that's not where your eyes need to be. Any good player knows that their key focus has to be on the ball, even though they're trying to win against their opponent. So in business world, it's the same thing. What's the ball? What are you really doing? Why are you in business? Who are you trying to serve? What's your motto? What is your mission? And that's the ball that you need to keep your eyes on. And actually, that brings you to a more cooperative, caring, compassionate place because you're coming from a place of wanting to serve. That's the ball, not from a place of, gee, where's my competition and how can I knock them over? It makes sense, Mary? I mean, it's
does. Focused. And now I know why I was lousy at tennis, Victoria. My greatest learning from today.
Oh, my God, if we had met sooner, Well, that's okay. I'll help you with that. So,
all right.
Yeah, but a good metaphor goes a long way, and it's very, very true. The focal point, businesses whose focal point is really in line with their highest values and their surest mission are going to be successful because they're doing what they set out to do, and their focus is really on the people who it is that they wish to serve, whether that's through product, through service or through product and service, no matter what it is, it's still the key focal point. The competition is, you know, and it's very interesting because we can either look at, you know, every stick has two ends. You know, you can either look at one side of the stick or the other side of the stick, you know. And a WAC model is a very sort of interesting, you know, we'll talk here in a minute a little bit about, you know, the best places to work and some of the numbers, but a WAC model never serves. If, you know, abundance has two ends of the stick, there's have and have not. And if you focus on have not, you can't get to have from have not. So you're not really going to get to growing your business while you're busy beating everybody off with a stick. The focal point is wrong. So actually, energetically, you're aiming in the wrong direction. You're focused on lack. And this is a very, very key point.
Don't you think it also gets to whether you're living your life inside out or outside in? It strikes me that if you're very focused on the competition and competitiveness, you're probably living your life from the outside in. Whereas if you're really focused on collaboration and cooperation, you're probably living a very different life from the inside out.
Yes, because they feel so different. And let's take a look at that. Business as usual, has so much to do with, the competitive vibe, the fear-based, the lack mentality, we've got to get there first, et cetera, et cetera. Mayor, do you have any other examples for us today from that world so that we then can now contrast that to what do the best places to work look like? How are they different? What are their landscapes compared to business as usual places?
Yeah, and really I enjoy speaking about this because in my client base, I have a client that was actually recognized as being a best place to work. But when I step away for a minute and look at the greater landscape, one of the most common threads that I see, and I don't know that it's talked about as often as it should, but the fact is, in companies that are indeed either recognized as best places to work or we know they are, the magic or the secret sauce, if you will, lies in the upper levels of leadership, because the upper levels of leadership in these companies, they model the vision, they model the values, they model whatever the mission of the company is. You know, these are not just what I call wallpaper on websites. It drives me crazy. You know, when I look at a company, research them online and take a look at their website, and you see this wonderful vision statement and these wonderful core values, and then you start talking to the associates and they hate their company, they don't like their customers. I mean, there's just grumble, 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 and you think, wow, there's a disconnect. But best places to work, it really starts there. And I'll give you a quick example. I was meeting with a client last week, and I could have hugged the CEO and the president because we were talking about succession planning, and we were talking about specifically some of their high performers, or as we like to use the buzzword, hypos. And we were talking specifically about the strengths of these hypos, and they really wanted to remain fixated on, we want to talk about their strengths. And they understood that there was absolutely no value in spending good conversation, good quality time focusing on their, what we call blind spots. You know, if you didn't have it, you don't have it. And what they quickly realized is, you know, our job is to try to help people determine what those blind spots are and then learn to mitigate them. So if you're a leader, you surround yourself, you know, with other people. So it's really quite interesting because there really is a very different vibe in companies that honestly are good places to work. It's very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very different vibe. And, you know, it needs to be modeled from the top. I mean, it needs to be, instilled in the founders, from the founders into, into everyone who works there. And it's about modeling. It's, you know, I mean, what do they say about parenting? Kids are going to do what you do. They're not going to do what you say, right? So there's a lot of saying out there. But the real function is, how does it act? What do you see? And the grumbles come from the disconnect. The grumbles come from, there may be a really good motto, there may be really good founding principles, but then when that gets convoluted and when that gets really, you know, contaminated, the business starts to lose its way, and then again, what happens? It flips more into a fear-based mentality because now it's sort of running to catch up.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does. It does. And, you know, it's also, Victoria, really very much about the style of leadership, because best places to work really understand this whole concept of serving leadership. Leaders are there to serve. Leadership is a verb. It's not a noun. And that is in stark contrast to companies that still, and boy, there are a lot of them, that it's still very much, it's very highly autocratic. It's very much just subtly my way or the highway with a smile on your face. It just, that's not working today. That's just not going to cut it.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I just thought, you know, of this, you know, do companies, you know, also can we look and see whether a company is sort of blinded by its own narcissism, such as, oh, well, you know, you should wear it as a badge of honor that you work here, versus we should be greatly appreciative that we have the opportunity to work at a company that serves in such a way.
Well, I'll tell you what, companies that still orchestrate or manage from the you should feel privileged working here. I think the millennial generation, which kind of gets a bad rap sometimes by our generation, I really admire them because they've come to the realization that, you know, the average person works 2,000 plus hours a year at their job. And that's if you're working 40 hours a week at a, you know, 50 hours, or 50 weeks a year at 40 hours a week. So you get 2,000 plus hours. And what the millennials, Victoria, are telling us is, you know what, if you're throwing up smoke and mirrors and this really isn't a collaborative environment, this isn't about cooperation, it's about competition, it's highly autocratic, highly narcissistic, I'm leaving. And, you know, the average lifespan of a millennial right now, which is kind of shocking, is 2.6 years. The average millennial will stay with a company only about 2.6 years. Don't you think that's
startling? That sure breaks the mold of, you know, well, yeah. Well, it's exactly what I know from clients, you know, and some of my brightest and most creative, you know, clients. They just really don't want to put up with, you know, something that's killing for much longer than is necessary to look legitimate on their resume, right? And give them enough experience to move to the next level or to the next workplace. You know, and it's interesting. You know, I also recently saw a statistic that said that about 65% of younger the younger workforce really wants to the motto matters. They really want to work for companies that have elements of social responsibility. And that's a big portion. It's a huge factor in that age range.
It is.
You know,
but
whether
again,
this company is yeah.
Yeah, if they don't see it modeled, if it's really just a bunch of nice words up on a website, again, they're not sticking around. And I think you make a good point. I wonder what the tenure really would be if they weren't concerned about making their resumes look a little more flattering when they interview for their next job.
It would be shorter.
Yeah.
I can honestly tell you. You know, it's almost like 2 years is the notch where it looks like, okay, you did a responsible job, it just wasn't a fit, or you learned what you needed to learn and you move on. You know, and this thing about, you know, the younger workforce, it's like, you know, I wonder, you know, the concept of open source is a relatively, you know, more sort of recent concept, protection versus, you know, this concept of protection of intellectual property. You know, are young people really wired differently? You know, do they know something their elders don't? Why aren't they paranoid or protective or competitive so much, you know, as the older generations are? They're sort of a different animal to some extent. You know, realize they grew up in a culture where, you know, there was a lot more milk and honey than there was, you know, depression and starvation and et cetera, you know, from earlier times of their elders. But nonetheless, you know, they really kind of are wired a little differently. They sort of think a little differently, right, Mary?
They do, and I think it goes back to, you know, when we were growing up, Victoria, we had pen pals that were maybe in the next town over, or maybe if we were lucky, they were in another state. You know, that's how archaic it was back then.
It doesn't go very far.
Yeah, I know. No, you didn't. But today, you know, these kids have global pen pals that they've had since they could learn how to, you know, sit in front of a computer or their iPad or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And I think this generation is much more in tune with sharing. Now, I love that about the millennials. I will say that sometimes I think they share a little too much, you know, when it comes to personal information and selfies and all that good stuff, right?
Well, I'm going to make a comment on this. I want to start a whole new trend here. Yeah, the whole concept of selfies is interesting because while we're talking about a group that's very much interconnected, believes in, you know, global citizenry and connected consciousness, et cetera, and social consciousness, you know, there's this whole thing about selfies, which is an interesting, very, very sort of, in my mind as a psychologist, narcissistic thread. And a selfie is a photo about yourself as separate. and fairly, you know, narcissistically rendered from those around you. I'm going to put out there that I think it would be more in line with the landscape of the world of the younger generation, and even those of us who are wired more progressively, to take groupies. You know, why don't you take a group picture? Why don't you take every picture that you're going to take, have a group of your buddies around you or your network or your work crew or something, you know, to really kind of, you know, reflect the fact that, yes, we are interconnected. This isn't just about me, but this is about me and my tribe, me and my crew, you know?
Yeah. And speaking of groupies.
Take some groupies out there, people. Yeah.
And speaking of that, there are a couple companies that I just want to give a shout out to, because I think they do yeoman's work in trying to, again, embrace this idea of open source, we'll share our information. Millikan is one of them. They're located in Spartanburg, South Carolina, manufacturer. They bring people from companies in to really learn how they have embraced Six Sigma, Lean Manufacturing, 5S, you name it. Disney's been doing it for years with Disney Institute, teaching people strategically, you know, how to put a strategic plan together, follow it, make sure that it's, you know, woven through all the fabric of your company. And then, you know, most recently, and I'll give a shout out to John Maxwell and my fellow John Maxwell consultants, because he just took a team of 250 John Maxwell folks to Paraguay, and they had an opportunity to serve over 10,000 people in that country, teaching them, just being an open book and teaching them how to be better leaders, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. And, you know, I want you folks to really just sort of think about this, and you know, the whole concept of fear versus love. You know, we bring this back to the opening statement about, hey, February's Love Month, and it's like, okay, there are two orientations to life. There's either living in a love-based, expansive, creative, curious, you know, engaged world, or there's the fear base of, you know, hey, how can I separate myself and survive? And or compete with somebody and have the bigger club. I'd like everybody to, and we sort of end each show with a little home play, not homework, that's no fun, but home play. And I'd like everybody to just sort of think about, what if I could just, you know, I wake up one morning and I just intend that day that I will live without fear or without focus on fear. I'm not going to engage in fear-based activities or focal points. So maybe that day you don't watch the news. Maybe that day you don't watch your biggest drama or intense show that you're going to watch that night. Maybe you just skip it and you focus on things that are expansive. I can tell you that it would be the first day of a new life, because being able to disengage from fear is a real important ability, and it is something that does take awareness, and it does take practice, and it does take love. It takes caring about, how am I going to be able to shift my focal point? And you've heard today about a lot of companies who have shifted their focal point, and they're around and thriving 95 years later. So there is something to this, to this way of thinking. It's not just a theory. It works, but it takes courage and it takes focus, because we're breaking some old patterns. In my book, I have a chapter entitled Failing at Success, and it's on my website. And again, you know, the fact is, success has failed us as we have defined it, and what does success really mean? And we've looked at that in earlier shows. So, you know, maybe play with that. Wake up one morning and say, hey, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, get through today with as least focus on fear as possible, and I'm going to notice when I feel it, and I'm going to notice when I engage it. So, hey, Mary, anything else? We've got about 60 seconds here. We're going to close, but we want to tell you that we have a very special guest. Coming up in our next show on the 23rd, and we're just going to give you one little hint, the question, are you a love cat? And we want you to please write on our comment page or connect with us by our email and tell us what your guess is, okay? So we're going to have some fun with you this month, and we really want to, you know, kind of hear from you, and, you know, please put your questions and comments in, but also guess who our guest is. How's that? So we hope that you have a great Valentine's Day coming up here soon, and that you do all kind of fun love cat stuff, and maybe you show a little love at work, and, act in the spirit of interdependence and cooperation and collaboration a little more, especially this coming week, and see what that feels like. Right, Mary?
Yes, and I love that. Fear-free. I'm going to do it. I love it.
All right, let's all practice, and we'll see in a couple of weeks here with a very special guest. Okay, take care, everybody. Have a great great Valentine's Day and a great love month. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.